Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're looking at Hanafuda, or flower cards. We've got a stack of sources, and we're digging into this seemingly simple deck. But it's got this incredible history, right? Secret codes, art, survival.
And, yeah, the really surprising origin story of a video game giant.
So first off, if you haven't seen them, what are Hanafuda?
Well, they're unique. You've got 48 cards, okay? And they're grouped into 12 suits.
For the months of the year.
Exactly, 12 months. Each with its own plant or flower. And there are no numbers, no standard suits like hearts or spades.
The value is all in the pictures.
All in the imagery. The plants, animals, sometimes objects. It's completely visual.
And our mission sort of for this deep dive is figuring out how these, you know, 48 bits of cardstock got such staying power. How did this art become basically eternal?
Yeah, that's the core question. And to get there, you really have to start with why they were made this way.
Necessity, right.
Pretty much. I mean, they have older roots in credit games, sure, but the decks we know today, they mostly came about during the Edo period. Very restrictive time.
Between, what, the 1600s and late 1800s?
Yeah, and the government back then had banned foreign playing cards, especially the Portuguese Caruta that came in. That ban was way back in 1633.
So the artisans making cards were kind of stuck.
Completely. They needed a way to keep making games, keep their craft alive, without breaking these strict anti-gambling laws.
So the non-traditional images, the flowers and animals, that was deliberate.
Absolutely. It was like a visual loophole, a secret code, almost. It let the game fly under the radar.
Clever.
And because it was this collective effort, this sort of workaround, you don't often see individual artists named. It wasn't about one person's genius.
It was about function and, well, survival.
Exactly. Utility.
What's really cool is how much meaning they packed into those images. Was that common knowledge back then, the symbolism?
Oh, definitely. It drew heavily on stuff everyone knew, classical Japanese poems, folklore. Each card is like a tiny story.
Like the January set.
Yeah. January's got the pine tree and the crane, both big symbols of longevity, long life, strong family bonds, really well-known symbols.
And wasn't there one about perseverance? The November cards?
Ah, right. The willow, the rain, the calligrapher Ono no Tofu.
Right.
And the story there is that Tofu was inspired, really pushed to achieve mastery in his own art by watching a little frog trying over and over again.
To jump onto a willow branch. Until it finally made it.
Exactly. So these aren't just pretty pictures. They're like little cultural touchstones, lessons embedded right in the game.
That ability to pack in meaning probably helped them spread too.
For sure. We see them move over to Korea, for instance. They get adapted and become Watu.
Watu meaning flower battle.
Right. And the Koreans changed them a bit. Physically, they shifted from paper to this, like, thick, glossy plastic.
Oh, yeah. They make that clicking sound when you play. Very distinctive.
Mm-hmm. And they even localize some images, like the Rain Man card, the Japanese official's hat got swapped out for a Korean traditional hat, the Wayan Jioji.
Small changes, but significant.
Yeah, shows that cultural adaptation. But maybe the biggest connection, especially for listeners today.
A Nintendo connection.
That's the one. Nintendo, you know, the video game giant.
Yeah.
Well, the company, originally Nintendo Koppai, was founded in Kyoto, 1889, and its original business.
Let me guess.
Manufacturing and selling hand-painted Hanafuda cards. That's how they started.
Wow. From hand-painted flower cards to, well, Mario.
It's quite the journey.
And they still make them today, right? Nintendo still produces traditional Hanafuda decks.
They do, which just underlines the incredible longevity we were talking about.
Yeah.
This art form has lasted.
So what's the takeaway here?
Well, I think Hanafuda really embodies this Japanese idea of iki. It's like a subtle, understated elegance that kind of flourished even under really tight constraints.
The rules forced creativity.
Exactly. The need to avoid gambling laws meant they had to rely on this rich symbolism and complex scoring based on specific combinations, specific sets of cards.
It wasn't about a single famous artist.
No. It proved that this kind of collective functional art can actually outlast the work of a named genius sometimes.
So, thinking about this for you, the listener, consider this. Those strict rules, the set combinations you need to score points in Hanafuda, rules born from just trying to survive.
Mm-hmm.
You could argue they're kind of an ancient blueprint for modern game design. Mm. Think about complex scoring systems, combos, set collection in games today.
Oh, that's interesting. The history of game rules itself.
Yeah. So the question to ponder is, what other ancient codes, things created out of necessity maybe centuries ago, are secretly shaping the entertainment we consume right now? What are we playing that has deeper roots than we realize?
Something to think about.
That's your deep dive for today.